Behind every good story is an interesting person. This is Person of Interest with Q102's Jeff Thomas.
Cincinnati chef Jean-Robert DeCavel is celebrating 40 years in the restaurant business, 25 of which he spent here in Cincinnati. He came to Cincinnati in 1993 to take over the famous five-star mobile-rated Maisonette restaurant. From there, he opened Jean-Robert at Pagal's, which, if he wasn't famous before, this is the restaurant that really put him on the map. Since then, he's opened places like Genre Bistro, Faux Paris, Green Up Cafe, Lavamatic, and now the upscale Restaurant L in Great American Tower, Table, French Crust Cafe, La Barre Bouff, Frenchie Fresh in Norwood, and Jean Bob's Burgers at Paul Brown Stadium. This guy is everywhere. So how did he get here? Has he always wanted to be a chef? What does a guy like Jean-Robert cook up for his family when he's not at work? On this week's Person of Interest, we get to know the man behind that kitchen door, Jean-Robert.
I'm a cook. You know, that's what I do. I cook.
You consider yourself a cook?
Of course I do. Of course.
What is the difference between a cook and a chef?
It's a huge difference. The chef is the one who is in charge. The cook is the one every one of us are cooks. You know, it's been a soldier. You could be a captain and you can be a commandant. You're still a soldier, you know, and it's kind of the same way, you know, but it's only one, it's only one commandant. It's only one captain. And that's the way it is. So when you become chef, when young people say I'm a chef and they're cooks, I always get in my generation, a chef is the one who is in charge. I mean, you're in charge of something, you know. So chef de cuisine, you're in charge of the kitchen. Executive chef, I mean, you're in charge if you have multiple location. You know, so
did you always know you wanted to be a cook or a chef?
I'm one of these very, my parents, I should say more than me, but my parents were very lucky parents because since I've been a young teenager, that's always something I want to do. And I think as a parent, I think it's a nice thing when when your kids know what they want to do. And so I always want to do it. I mean, I think when I was in my young teenage age, I know it's what I want to do, and I don't even know why.
What made you want to do? Yeah, I was just.
It's
saying,
one of these things, could come from my mom. I mean, I'm from a five children family. My mom never went to work. I mean, she worked as hard than any other people who went to work, but she never, she was working at home, feeding us breakfast, lunch, and dinner, 7 days a week. I mean, my dad took over the kitchen on Sunday, and it's something he loved to do. I mean, he didn't do the cleanup, but loved to do the cooking. And my mom did the cleanup on Monday. Mm-hmm. And so I think that probably, growing up and under this environment, I think that make me feel like, I had the chance to go to restaurant once in a while with my family. And then so I experienced, the tipping yourself. And I don't know, I think it's little many factors, a lot of little factors who make me really enjoy it. And I always enjoy being in the kitchen with my mom, with my grandmother. I always did enjoy helping and putting things together.
And you have to have a love for food, I would think, too, right?
I think it's one of this, I think many business you could do without passion, and it's many business you need to do it with passion.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of them where it's a lifestyle. And of course, you have a chance to do so many different things. And I know it's very interesting in the restaurant industry, in the food industry, because if you really think about it, a butcher will almost do the same job on a daily basis or weekly basis. I have a brother who used to be a baker. I mean, you go to his place at the same time, 7 o'clock in the morning, you will know he will do the same thing every single day because the bread has to be ready for the customer. And it was not many different, it was not many different things he could do. The beautiful thing about being a cook, and people sometimes don't realize that, it's like, people order different things. The season bring you different vegetables. So it's like it's never the same. One day everybody decide to eat the meat of the day. The next day everybody decide to eat the fish. And, so you always do the same, it's the same job. But at the same time, it's so many different things. You touch so many different things. You see, it's a lot of learning experience. And we all talk about farm to table. We always laugh about it because farm to what that mean. I mean, since
it's very trendy. Farm to table is very trendy now, right?
I guess I don't like trend, but because farm to table. I mean, for me, food comes from the farm. Know what I mean? So
for you, it's always been farm to table.
That's what it is. And I think it's not only for us, but for everyone. I mean, for everyone, the food comes from the farm. I mean, And I like. I mean, the local thing is really important to me because that you start realizing. The local products are the best products because they don't have far to travel for you to cook them and then for you to enjoy them. So
It's such a very creative business, too, when you think about, I mean, the food not just tastes wonderful, but it's a work of art. It's beautiful to look at. Is there a lot of pressure to be creative in that way?
You know, it's one of the things, you know, and I try to explain that to young people who want to be part of it. And another thing I like to, you know, without being, and of course, it's a long conversation, but I like to consider cooks and chefs as artists.
Yes.
But we are more like craftsmen. You know, it's like we are doing a craft. And doing a craft, that means we have to be ready when the customer needs us, when the customer are ready to eat, when, you know, the products have to be cooked. You know, so I always compare my, you know, when people talk about an artistic, it's definitely an artistic job if you decide to do work with the season and work with, you know, seasonal products and work with and I in the restaurant, his and more artistic, the restaurant need to be different, you know, because you need to make a difference from the other restaurant who's doing something different. But in the end of the day, we are craftsmen. I mean, we are building something, and the expectation is really strong from the other side of the restaurant. You know, people have a lot of high expectation. So I think it's, you know, when the door open, you have to be ready. I always say, like, we are like Broadway show. You know, like when you see a Broadway show or when you see a beautiful performance, you know, you think they are doing that for you. You sit there in that room and you feel like they are connected with you. But, you know, they've been on the road. They've been doing it 1,000 times. After they're done with your show, they do another one later on. They move to another town to do the same thing. But what you want them to do at that time when you're there and one of the person in the room, you want them to do it for you. You know what I mean? And I think it's a very similar in the restaurant business. It's like that's becoming part of like your experience. I mean, it's all about cooking. I mean, cooking and restaurant is all about experience. It's all about making people feel important, make people feel, give them memories, give them, I mean, it's, you know, a different level. I mean, it can be a very basic.
Is that why you and Richard Brown work so well together? Because I feel like Richard Brown, who you co-own restaurant
yes.
And you have worked with Richard going back to the days of the Masonette, right? He is one of those guys that when you walk into the place, whether he's laid eyes on you before or not, you always feel like a VIP. Mm-hmm. You know, you always feel like you're a rock star.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly what it is. I mean, when I talk about experience, I mean, of course, you know, you automatically think when you go somewhere, the food will be automatically have to be good, you know. Right. But I think it's part of an experience of the first, you know, even when you make reservation, I mean, even when you talk to someone on the phone and they really make you feel like, you know, you cannot wait to be there. And, we're really talking about high-end, more like a high-end restaurant, not the restaurant where you decide to go pop in because it's a Tuesday night and you don't feel like cooking at home, so you're going to go to one of the neighborhood restaurants. But in the end, I think you want to be recognized. In the end, you want to feel welcome. In the end, you want to feel like you want to see that, you know, making feel like you are going to really enjoy yourself. And it's a huge human being relationship between, you know, between a maitre d' and and someone who've never been to the restaurant, and then that's where the experience starts, you know. And I think Richard and I, we've been working at the Mis, and I know Richard knows for like we'll be 25 years by the end of the year. And, you know, he knows everybody in town. We have been working in three different restaurants together. He came and joined me at Pigalle's when I reopened Pigalle's, and then we did this restaurant air. And so that's like, you know, to make sure, you know, people understand is what we give them is, it's an experience, it's memories.
It's such a special experience to be able to try something new, to try flavor combinations that are put together that we may not have ever imagined putting together. It is sort of dinner and a show sometimes.
It's what it is. And I think, you know, why do we go to a restaurant? I always love to say, those little silly things. You know, I'm a Tanqueray and tonic drinker. You know, I like to drink a Tanqueray and tonic. And I say, what do you think is the best Tanqueray and tonic you can have? And it's in my house, you know, because it can be done the way I want it. You know, if I want more tonic, I will put more tonic. If I want more ice cube, I put more ice cube, depending on, you know, what, if I'm going to have one or if I'm going to have two. But, you know, people still go to restaurant, people still go to bar because, they want to be taken care of. And I think today with social media madness and all of that connection all the time, like, you know, like, have you looked at your email every 2 minutes to make sure you have not missed one? I think going to a restaurant, and regardless the level of the restaurant, regardless if it's just a little place on, you're on vacation and you stop by on a side road, and then it's like, you know the food's gonna be made by a cook, and it's going to be tasty. It's giving you that experience, that memories. And then you start talking with the person you have dinner with or lunch with, you know, the person you spend time with. So treating yourself is something I think more and more is we are going to look for. And I think that's one of the reasons the dining out is becoming more and more important to people.
Yeah, I do feel it's more important now today than it was 20 years ago, where we have so many people today that consider themselves foodies.
Foodies, yeah.
This industry has networks.
It's unbelievable. This past 15 years, we saw that in Cincinnati, you know, quite strongly, you know, with all of the different type of restaurant, different type of ethnic restaurant, different type of, the foodies used to go to Chicago. I mean, they always have good, solid restaurants in Cincinnati, like any other market. But I think today you definitely have more, you know, range of wonderful restaurants where people just give you that experience that you look for.
What is your favorite restaurant that's not a Jean Robert restaurant here?
You know, it's a hard question to answer because it's like, you know, I go to every restaurant and I know people and I'm actually I consider myself a very low critic because when I go with the flow, I mean, I have a group of friends of mine where we enjoy doing brunch and we try to go everywhere and I can mention restaurant, but then it wouldn't be not fair to the one I will not mention because
right.
I try to go everywhere for like brunch. We try to go everywhere. I always go for the late brunch. And it could be the neighborhood restaurant too. You know, I live in Newport and sometimes we visit the neighborhood restaurant and because, you know, I don't feel like cooking and I don't feel like driving anywhere. And so I think, you know, Cincinnati have so many restaurants. I can mention so many restaurants
Does the atmosphere change? I would think that if I was running a restaurant and Jean Robert walked into my restaurant, I would feel a lot of pressure. I would think that would be very high pressure. They're like, oh my goodness, Jean Robert is here. Like, I better not screw up tonight. Do you notice people acting weird?
I do.
Do they
you
get
know,
nervous
I do, and sometimes
around
people don't recognize me right away, but then a customer would be sitting in the same room and then they may say something and then
right.
suddenly I can feel like the...
You can tell
suddenly I feel the
busted.
Turn.
Yeah.
I feel
we're
the turn.
Watching.
You know, I feel the turn.
What do you like to make when you're at home? You know, we talked about how when you're at home, you can make your tangerine and tonic the way you like it. What kind of food do you like to make?
So, you know, at home is actually it's kind of funny because it's I have my daughter who is now, on Monday. It's most of the time I try to take the Monday evening off and that's where I do the cooking. I mean, like my wife will tell you, because I'm a cook, she doesn't cook very much, and she don't even experience. So I'm the one who always have to end up by doing I'm doing the cooking and it's really based on simple, tasty. And on Monday, most of the time when I pick up my daughter from school, we spend some time together and I would say, hey, what do you feel like eating tonight? And then, so she direct me to something and then I do something quickly. And of course, it's completely unfair to some other cooks because I could do it faster. I could do it, I could do it quick. And so I do anything. We just had a dinner last night and then I did my daughter want some beef, so I did filet mignon with some sauces. I mean, I have good resources too with the restaurant too. So
is that where you do your food shopping? Is you shop at the restaurant? Or
most of the time, I do that. I mean, it's the same thing you were talking about being in the restaurant.
It's a perk.
If I go to a grocery store, sometimes it's quite funny to see when people recognize me and they try to sneak and see what I have in my basket and asking me question which one I should, what avocado I should pick.
Yeah.
It's kind of cute, but it's that, that's the thing I'm very thankful because that's what, you're part of a community where I have the respect and I love the community. And I think that's part of being a little celebrity into what I do, into that, to a city.
So Jean Robert, do you have, in your home, do you have a gas stove, an electric stove?
Yes, I do have a gas stove.
Stove.
I do have a gas stove. I do have a very nice two convection oven. I put a nice little setup when we moved to Newport. Almost over 10 years ago, and I put a nice little setup, and so it's like they kind of like what they call like commercial stove and then
right.
convection oven, and I think it's make it easy, so.
Coming up next, as Person of Interest continues, more from Jean Robert as he talks about his life growing up in France, the path that got him here, how the restaurant business has changed, and how the people of Cincinnati got him through one of the darkest times in his life.
We'll be back with more Person of Interest in a moment. Person of Interest with QNO2's Jeff Thomas continues.
Welcome back to Person of Interest. We're speaking with Jean-Robert DeCavel, who is arguably the most famous chef in Cincinnati, if not this entire region. We're going to talk about how he came to Cincinnati and why he stayed longer than he originally planned. We'll also talk about how the restaurant business has changed over the past 15 to 20 years and how the people of Cincinnati got him through one of the toughest, darkest times in his life.
So you come from France, obviously. Mm-hmm. What part of France?
I'm from north of France, so close to Belgium. It's 200 kilometers above Paris and 200 kilometers under Bruxelles. So if you go straight shot to Bruxelles, yeah.
Walk us through the path of how you got from...
You know, it's one of these... been in a family of five, and we did travel. I mean, actually, my dad was traveling for food. We went to, you know, we went to different part of France, like Alsace, so he can get his pâté and this Alsatian wine. And then we went to the Brittany, where we could eat seafood, and we traveled quite well, you know, as a family. But I realize also if you go to the pattern of cooking, then you can go anywhere. You know, and so I did.
You say go anywhere, I mean travel anywhere?
You can travel anywhere. You can travel anywhere because the language could be a barrier, but the food, the language, it's the same everywhere, you know.
Right.
And I had a chance to travel a lot during my younger days. I mean, I did an apprenticeship. So apprenticeship, you know, I did an apprenticeship in a restaurant. That was kind of forced by my dad because my dad, you know, it's like at the time, he knows what I want to do, but he wanted to make sure I didn't. It was the things I'm going to do.
Was the apprenticeship, was that your first job in the restaurant?
It was my first job. And I started the day when I turned 16.
When you're 16. And what kind of restaurant
was it? It was actually in the train station of Lille. So in the train station, what was actually a very, I don't know when I got the apprenticeship contract, but it was actually an amazing place to learn because we had the fine dining restaurant, you know, and the upscale restaurant. We had a huge amount of banquet. Room and salon, and then we also had kind of like the fast serving restaurant. We had two fast serving restaurants into the train station where people were in and out. And I mean,
fast
it's not
serving,
fast
food, like
fast but fast
food.
Serving. Yeah, not fast food. It's fast serving.
Fast serving.
So you know, you have 45 minutes to catch your second train or to catch a train, and then you will have a meal very quickly, a bowl of soup and a nice little roasted chicken or something very quickly. So I was able to be exposed into many different. It was quite a large organization, and actually, when you think about it, and you look at the history of France, most of the restaurants in the train station, they were probably some of the best restaurants in France for a very long time.
Really,
turn of the century, because that's where people took their time, and they were like, you know, doing. I mean, you know, that they were, you know, when they were waiting for a connection of train, that's it. Then they went to the restaurant, and if they had time, then they went to the more fine dining. And then if they don't have the time, they went more to the more casual and fast service. So it was a very powerful apprenticeship. I mean, I learned a lot. I was surrounding with chef and sous chef and cooks who were very like, you know, I mean, at the time we don't even, everything came from scratch. I mean, I never, every fish were fresh. I mean, everything, we didn't do anything prepackaged or pre-made I never had that. And so from there, I realized I want to travel. So as a young man, I had to do my military time in France. And so for 1 year, I was in my military, I did the military. And then after that, I went and I decided to really travel. And
I have
then,
to ask, were you a cook in the military?
I was actually driving trucks. And then half of it, I was cooking as well. Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And then I went to travel and I went to Switzerland, to the German part. And then I just travel. So, and I did what they call a seasonal job where you really go for 6 months. For 6 months, you go either on the water side during the summertime, and then you go to the ski side, to the mountain in the wintertime.
Oh.
And I did that for 4 years. So all very different restaurants from where I was working by myself was, you know, like more or less, I was not the chef, but I was the cook, you know, because it was small dining room, small restaurant.
Right.
Up to a restaurant where we had 110 cooks. It's called Palace in France. I mean, like this very famous, you know, kind of like the Greenbrier or places like that, you
right.
know, like that was on the border of the Atlantic Sea. And when I was doing these 4 years, chef or coworkers they were less like telling me like I should go to fine dining because I had, you know, I really love what I was doing and I really wanted to learn more. And then from I really started going to really where the star Michelin was. And so I went to Monte Carlo, and it was one of the first star Michelin in Monte Carlo. Was one star.
So it sounds like you were learning on the job as you went, like as you were hitting all these
cities. That's a beautiful thing about what you did, like we do, you know, and I'm still learning today.
So you didn't go to like the Culinary Institute of America or Europe or wherever. Yeah. I mean, did you have formal training in this field?
Oh, I mean, you have to. I mean, when you do apprenticeship, you actually had, you know, I work 30 hours a week, and I went to school for 30 hours. So
oh,
it was,
okay.
You know, you're 16 years old, you put 60 hours of between school and apprenticeship.
Oh, no kidding.
So, you know, so it's a, you know, and then you graduate as, you know, you get the same, you graduate.
Right.
I think you doing an apprenticeship was very, I mean, you know, in France it's a little bit, in Europe it's a bit different than here, but it really, you know, and that's something I will say to young people most of the time who decide to join this business. You know what? If you graduate from high school or graduate, when you graduate, just maybe find a job somewhere for a year, you know, find a job for a year, try to find the right, you know, the right teacher, try to find the right people who can give you that, you know, can share the passion if you have it. And then after that, you go to school and get your basic, you know, your basic understanding what the business is all about.
Almost take it like a gap year in between
high
school.
And I will recommend that because, you know, it's a different type of a job. You know, you work when people have a good time, you know.
Right.
It's
so you stop in Monte Carlo. I mean, that must have been crazy living in Monte. I mean, that's one of the best.
It was beautiful. It was beautiful.
Unreal. We stayed in Ez.
Oh yeah, beautiful.
Last year at this time,
it was gorgeous,
stunning.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, it must have been hard for you to leave that part of the world.
It's making me homesick over there. Yeah, you know.
It was.
If I look back, if I look back, what I did, you know, I can share many stories. You know, you know, when I was working for my when I used to stay, my little room that I had, and I walked to the restaurant, I saw Jan Borg all the time, you know, the tennis player, because he had the store right there, and he always waved at me. I saw him like, you know, maybe if it was not twice a week, it was, you know.
No kidding.
You know, and I waved at him, and I went to work. And I mean, you know, you live in a different type of life when you live in city like that. You know? And then from there, I left and I went to work in a 3-star Michelin in Antibes. And
then, a 3-star Michelin.
3-star Michelin in Antibes. Yeah, I went to work for the Rostand family, Michel Rostand was the older son of the person I work with. Quite successful restaurant, a few restaurants in Paris. And so, and then from that, working for Jean Rostand, the name of the restaurant was called La Bonne Auberge. And it was like this very, very well-known restaurant between Cannes and Nice. So, you know, if you were looking where you were going, where you were staying in the south of France, and, you know, you had the luxury to be able to enjoy your restaurant, high-end restaurant, La Bonne Auberge was a destination restaurant.
No kidding.
And it was just right there on the Route Nationale 7, and talking about Aix was like right there, not far away from there.
Right.
That's where they sent me to Caribbean, and that's where they start being responsible for the food and beverage and the kitchen of a very high-end restaurant. Hotel in Anguilla. It doesn't exist anymore, but it's to be called the Maluiana Hotel, one of the top hotels in the world and the number one hotel in Caribbean. I mean, we're getting our, you know, from chicken de Bresse, or the best chicken in the world. We're getting that from France. We're getting the lamb from France. We're getting the beef from America. I mean, it was like, you know, we were, and I worked there for, I did a winter season in Caribbean, who I did love it too. And then after that, I moved to New York City.
Now, what brought you to New York City? You were offered a job?
Same thing, yes. New York City was a little bit different. New York City, I was also with the same chef that I worked for, the 3-star Michelin chef and the family. His son on the 2-star in Paris now and a few other restaurants with his daughter. And they sent me to New York and they became the same thing. They became in charge of the restaurant of the Plaza Athénée. It was an hotel in Paris and it was an hotel in New York City. It still exists on 64th Street. And I became the sous chef there. I was one of the sous chefs. I just turned 26 years old and I was, you know, like, and New York was also, you know, being in New York was like, you know.
What years were those? Do you remember what?
No, it was 1986.
86. Mm-hmm. And you were in New York for how long? 86?
I was in New York until I moved to Cincinnati in the late 93, yes.
Mm-hmm. So you and I lived in New York at the same time. I was there from 90 to 93.
Mm-hmm.
You and I left New York around the same time, but I went elsewhere. You came to Cincinnati before
Cincinnati.
I did.
Yeah.
And it was to take the job where you...
It was to take the job of the maisonette.
And how did they discover you? Did you...
See, it was one of this, you know, it was one of this... I left the Plaza Athénée. I've been there for so many years as an executive chef. So I was a sous chef, then the chef left, and then they hire another chef, didn't really work out. And then my GM at the time really wanted me to become the chef. So I had a chance to become the chef of the Plaza Ateneo. I was 27 years old. And so I stayed there for many years. I had some visa and then I left to open to be part of a group. I opened a little restaurant in the village, and things was not really working very well. And it was 1993. I mean, it was 1992, and I have to say the economy in New York was really, really, was not that strong, and I felt like I should have probably never left that restaurant, that hotel. And then I have someone who I know for a long time, because I know him since 1986, was, of course, today is a very well-known chef, is Daniel Boulud, because Daniel Boulud opened the Plaza Athénée. And when Daniel Boulud left the Plaza Athénée to go to Le Cirque, that's where I came with this chef from France. So I know Daniel since 1986. And so the Maisonette owners, they went to New York for the search of a young European chef. And then they went to see Daniel. They went to see many other restaurants. And they were also always talking to the chef, mentioning like, hey, we are on the look for a young chef. We're on the look of someone who could come to Cincinnati and take over a five-star restaurant. Or chef is retiring after 29 years. And that's where Daniel called me home. And, and of course, at the time, it's no cell phone, no very hard communication. If you think about it. So he called me, leave me a voicemail on my answering machine at home. And I met with him. And I mean, we were in this office and looking where Cincinnati is. I mean, it was always every time I say that story, it's funny now because it's like, and I was really looking in our little follow fax, our little map in the end of that, and then looking where Cincinnati, when it was close to Cleveland, when it was close to Chicago. First, let's find Chicago and Cleveland.
Yeah. And then somewhere and there then we'll find it.
So, mm-hmm.
So you come to Cincinnati.
I came.
And you're under tremendous pressure to continue this legacy. Mm-hmm. Of the Maisonette, which is a five-star mobile-rated mm-hmm. restaurant. Were you scared? I mean, you must have been terrified.
I don't, I was not. I mean, I was not. I think also I have to really say, it's like, the chef was in his early 60s, want to retire, was around for almost, three decades. And, and I said the food the food is not better today than it was many years ago.
No.
I wouldn't want to say that because, I think what's different, it's a generation, it's a different generation. So of course you have a little bit of a, like contemporary way of doing things. Mm-hmm. You have more products available right there, because by then, you were going to the Maisonette in the 50s. For them to get the fish was more difficult to get the fish from Europe than it is today. It was more difficult for them. It was no local products like we have it now. But it was different type of generation. And I think the food go to different type of generation, so the food was really like very, very 1980s, early 90s, And when I came, I didn't know what the type of food they were doing, and the food was definitely fresh and best products you can find. But it's just the way you were saying that earlier, just the way you put things on the plate.
So you talk about the presentation was different.
And the style of cooking, like most of the fish were going to the flour bin. I mean, you didn't cook fish without putting any flour on it. You didn't cook any chicken without putting any flour on it.
Interesting.
You didn't put any veal without putting... My generation was... No, we realized we can do... We didn't need the flour to cut the fish, to cut the so it was it's a different style, and it was like generation.
Was the food richer in terms of more sauces used?
Yes,
in
it
those
was.
Days?
I mean, it was, but it was a style. It was a style of making sauce with roux, and you make sauce with thickener. No, we just ready the stock until the stock is perfectly fine on your plate. And it was a different. It was not better. It was not. It's not like I did cook better food, but it was a different style. It was a different style.
What about the food concerns of today where everybody is very preoccupied with where the food comes from, how it was sourced? All the dietary restrictions, did they play as much of a role then as they seem to today? And how have you adapted?
I think today, it's always the same thing. I think today we're more aware about what's good for you and what's not good for you, and I think because of that, food have a huge impact of try to eat healthy if you want to stay healthy, and I think that's that. So it's more like an health conscious, than, And I explained that at the Plaza Athénée in the beginning, because I was, you know, short little story. You know, we used to have Paul McCartney and Linda McCartney used to stay with us every time they, every time you have a show at Madison Square Garden.
Wow.
And they always came in the end of the night, and they always came, you know, after the show.
So they would dine in your restaurant, Paul and Linda McCartney?
They were eating in their suite. And every night I had to create, the whole team was vegetarian.
Right.
And at the time, you know, vegetarian was interesting, because vegetarian at the time, the cooks were looking at someone vegetarian, more someone who was like a health issue, more like someone who could not eat anything. And so they were eating like bland, overcooked vegetables. But they make me understand that they were vegetarian because it was a belief of not eating any meat or not eating any fish. And so I had to be out, I had to be actually very creative to make sure they were pleased. And they were staying with us for 3 nights or 4 nights. And they were like 12 to 15 people. I mean, the whole band was vegetarian. And I remember, and that was challenging, you know, that was challenging. And so I learned really how to adopt, you know, I mean, adopt to things people really want, and realizing it was a choice of life, of lifestyle, and I had to respect that. And I still had to do something very tasty and something they were looking for.
What are some of the flavors that are more popular? I know you don't like the word trendy, you know, you don't like to follow trends or get caught up in trends, but were we shaving truffles and utilizing truffles in food 10, 20 years ago?
50 years ago, you will have been more lucky because you will have a lot of truffle. You know, I remember my apprenticeship, we used to have that dish where we took a whole truffle. We wrap, I mean, it's kind of interesting because what we did, they cooked the truffle. It was kind of like a little bit silly. People realized we don't need to cook them anymore to be able to use them. I mean, I'm talking black truffle because you cannot cook white truffle at all. But at the time, they were like, you know, chef where, I mean, it was a huge abundance. It was not that expensive. I mean, they were expensive, but not as expensive than they are today.
But was so it used demands, as much back then? Like in Europe, it probably was. But was it in America?
It's interesting when you look. In America, no. I mean, in America, it was some, you know, it was probably only used, you know, it was not as used in America the way it's used today. No, yeah. Definitely not. But, you know, it's the same thing in France. I mean, I grew up in North of France. My mom never cooked with olive oil. You know, I mean, I grew up with not eating, you know,
your mother never cooked with olive oil?
No, and you know, and it's only where, you know, the same thing. My aunt,
she cooks with butter.
Move to south of France. So then we got introduced with olive oil, you know. And today, you know, I mean, you know, you go everywhere and you have like three type of different oil on your counter, three type of different, you know, different type of vinegar and different type of, you know, even butter. You know, olive oil doesn't make the butter taste bad or not good. Just it's a different style of cooking, you know.
What are some of your favorite flavors? Right.
Oh, you know, I'm
today.
A very, I like strong flavor, you know, so
strong
I mean,
flavor.
You talk about truffle, I mean, truffle is one of my favorite smell, you know, and dish, you know what I mean? I always tell people, you have to be careful because truffle, you know, a lot of truffle oil and some of the truffle products you could find, they may not be necessarily true natural flavor and smell, you know, but
there's a lot of counterfeit truffle out there, I've heard.
Yeah, well, I hear it is quite a lot. Yeah, but it's because of the demand. People, they love that smell, the sense of truffle.
Yeah.
You know, so,
but you say there's less of it. It's in such high demand, which I guess would make it more expensive.
Yeah, because I mean, it's only, you know, the people, I mean, you know, we try, I think it's a few farm in America, we try to get some truffle, but it's only coming from the same country that it came from 80 years ago.
I'm just looking at this list of restaurants that you've been connected to or affiliated with over the years, besides Pigalle's, which is the one that made you really famous after the Maisonette, Genre Bistro, Faux Paris, Green Up Cafe, Lavamatic. When I moved to Over the Rhine, I don't live in Over the Rhine anymore, but I moved to 12th and Vine.
Nice.
And that was when Lavamatic was the only restaurant. Yeah. I think it was you and Senate, and that was...
Yeah.
And there was nothing else going on at OTR in those days.
It was amazing at the time.
Yeah. Twist, which was adjacent to...
To Pigalle's,
place. Mm-hmm. Let's see. Now we got Table, French Crust Cafe, which we've dined at many times.
Thank you.
Restaurant L, Great American Tower. La Barre Bouffe, which is up the hill here around the corner. Mm-hmm. You got a lot going on.
Yeah, I do.
And every restaurant's different.
Yeah, and it's a different level of price, different type of expectation. And I think that's something I do enjoy, you know, be able to put a team together, try to be involved a lot with the feel of the restaurant, and then be able to give opportunity to people to dine with us, you know, more often than they want to. And I think it's a... And that's kind of like really something I enjoy. I mean, all of these restaurants came with, a little bit of passion of, you know, of the location. Mm. And, you know, I mean, our new, you know, Frenchy Fresh, it was something that we always talk about doing some, you know, very quickly serve food. And then, you know, we were able to find a spot in Norwood. And, you know, and it's something where, you know, you relax me 6 months before, I will have to tell you, I don't think I will ever do that. You know, I don't think I would have done something like that, you know.
No.
Reopening, you know, reopening and, the, you know, opening air was something, you know, where I, you know, it's, I always want to reopen some, you know, an upscale experience, you know, where the guests are definitely the center of the, you know, are the center of what we do, you know.
Do you find yourself spending more time at Restaurant L? Is there one restaurant you spend more time at than another?
I do because of what the restaurant demands. What the restaurant demands, you know, and what, you know, it's not necessarily the our guests, but it's definitely like, you know, I trust, I have an amazing team when it comes to the kitchen team. But, you know, it's a restaurant where I feel like a little bit, you know, like my association was, you know, like, you know, and I did that with Table for many years. And I think Table has been running by amazing team too, you know, between the, you know, Maitre D and Marie Lou has been with me since day one we opened. We've been friends since, you know, since I moved to Cincinnati. Same thing with the chef, you know, everybody, you know, I have a connection with everyone on my team. And I think it's important, you know, it's a, but L is where I feel comfortable. You know, it's nice to, I think people have an expectation of want to see me. They want to talk to me. And then after that, I try to jump from restaurant to another and to make sure, like, you know. So during the day is business things and want to be there for my team. And I enjoy it. I mean, of course, when I open a new place, my wife sometimes like, oh, you know, what are you going to do? We're never going to see you. But, you know, it's like, you know, when you enjoy what you do, it's not about going to work. It's really enjoying what you do and want to be there.
What do you, what's your favorite wine? What type of wine do you like to drink?
You know, wine is also the, you know, wine, I mean, one of course, you know, if I would pick one wine, it would definitely be a Pinot Noir, like a Chervé Chambertin, or, you know, one of these type, you know, I'm more like a Pinot Noir lover than I am more Cabernet Sauvignon or Merlot. But it's so hard because, you know, when you say that, I can see it's depending of the dish I'm going to eat.
Depends on what you serve.
Depending of what, you know. So, you know, I have a huge love for wine because that's part of what I do too. You know what I mean? I mean, be able to match the perfect wine with the perfect dish because of, you know, acidity level, different type of reason, you know, and I think it's...
Is there one part of the world you prefer wine? In other words, like, do you prefer California wines?
I mean, I think
it's French wines.
I think it's more about a learning experience. You know, it's more like a learning experience.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I think it's interesting too because, you know, I mean, I grew up by drinking more French wine than any other wine. I mean, I feel like my knowledge on Italian wine is very limited as well than Spanish wine.
Right.
But I still enjoy them too. You know what I mean? And I think, you know, and of course, you know, when you are used to a Bordeaux Cabernet, when it's more like a little bit softer, a little bit deeper in some way, and then you drink a Cabernet style from California, it's going to be very different. Same thing with Chardonnay. But I think after that is about understanding the wine and understanding what the, you know, winemaker want to do, you know, with this wine. So, you know, I mean, I enjoy the Pinot Noir from the Oregon. I mean, I think they are so flavorful and beautiful, you know.
As a chef and as a restaurateur, is it difficult to find quality talent, quality servers? How difficult is it to find them here?
It's a lot of restaurants.
Yeah, a lot
and
of
you know, I'm going to, you know, it's actually difficult today to find, you know, to find. I think it's because of the demand everywhere, and I think it's the same. You know, I've been reading a lot of article from different state or larger city, and I think it's a little bit of an issue finding the right staff. You know, finding a team is not always easy to put a team together, and so, you know, so automatically what it comes to that is, you have to be able to train and be able to, you know, make people understand, you know, why are you doing that? You know, why do you want certain things to be done a certain way? And of course, you know, I always love, you know, I like to say that because I think it's really, you know, it's like, you know what you learn. You know, nobody's born knowing, and I mean, nobody know anything until you learn it, you know. And I think after that, when you learn it, then it's like, if you're really into it, then you will remember. And that's something I always say, you know, regardless if you become a, you know, you go to medical field or music field or cooking field, you know, in the beginning, you have to learn it. And then if you're passionate about it, then the learning will translate to something you're really passionate about and enjoying. And I think when you come to the hospitality business, and definitely from the front of the house, you know, you see when you meet a young person and you see, okay, that person, I have that in it, you know, like, you know, because it's like, it's many things you need to learn, but it's also things you have to have it inside. And I think to be very, very welcoming, to be very positive, to make you feel comfortable is something, it's something you don't, you know, I mean, you know, I'm sure, you know, you can train by someone, but you know, it's nice for me when I see young people who, in the beginning, they walk and, you know, and the maitre d' may be hard, or, you know, like I can have example with Mary Lou at table, and she was hard on these little young kids, you know, and then no, you know, some of them went to the food industry and now they have so much, you know, it's, they always had the respect for her, but they didn't really understand sometimes what was, what she tried to do, you know, and now they have respect for her because now they work in the industry and they become in charge, and now they expect the same thing that she expects from them. From the younger people, and I love when I see that. You know, I enjoy that so much because it's part of growing up. It's part of really understanding what you are there for.
You really, I mean, I think we both know you could work pretty much anywhere in the world. Why have you stayed in Cincinnati as long as you have?
I don't know. It was kind of I think it's like the time fly. You know, let's be honest with that, time fly. I think when I moved to Cincinnati, I became the chef of the maisonette. And when you're the chef of the maisonette has so much respect to people. You know, I always loved to share that little silly story. How many times I went somewhere and people say, oh, I love the maisonette, love the maisonette. And I say, when the last time you were there? Well, I've never been, you know. And I, you know, it happened to me many times. But I think when I moved here, I think people, I had to get my respect from people. But I think, you know, because I want to be here and I want to do the best job I could for the maisonette, then I got the welcome. I got this big welcome love than you have in the Midwest. And I see that with, I see that with other people who are not necessarily in my field, but, you know, the first person I'm thinking is Victoria Morgan from the ballet. You know, she come to town and she really embraced the ballet, and she here not just to, you know, it was not on her mind, okay, what's going to be next? No, it was like, I want to do the best I can for the city because right. I care about people and I care about what I do. And suddenly, you know, you get turned into that fast life, and then you turn around and it's 5 years, 10 years, and now it's going to be 25 years by the end of the year. And Cincinnati, I mean, I'm so happy today because I've been such a huge ambassador for that town since I came, you know, because of, you know, what Cincinnati gave. I mean, you know, I live in New York City, and in New York, it's fast life. Everything is extremely expensive. You may have the Broadway show, but you may not have time to go. You may have some of the best entertainment in the world, but you may not have the time to go in Cincinnati. So it's a small town with a lot of big city things, you know, and of course the beauty of the city is wonderful too. I mean, living near the river. I mean, I think it's a lot of things Cincinnati deserves to be recognized for many, many, many years. And finally, I'm kind of happy to see that because now finally, you know, like, I mean, when you see what's happening over the Rhine, when you see what's happening with every little area in the city, you know, finally, the outsiders realize Cincinnati is actually a very livable town. Quick story, it was really amusing because when I came back, I had a hard time moving to Cincinnati because of being Cincinnati and not knowing if I should stay in New York or go to a bigger market.
Yeah.
And so the job was really attract me because I realized I could bring the new generation of food, the new generation, the new style of cooking. I mean, I came with no recipe. I mean, I came and I didn't really know what they were expecting from me. But, you know, that's one thing. Cincinnati have this town who's always been welcoming.
Everybody I talk to says Cincinnati is a very difficult place to assimilate. If you're not from here originally, it's hard to make friends here because people have lived here their whole lives. They're growing up in the same neighborhood. So for outsiders like you and me, I could see how it'd be really difficult. But you and I think, have one thing in common, and that is that when we both came to Cincinnati, in our own respective fields, you and I both made the decision that we were happy to be here. We were going to embrace the city. We were going to do our best to succeed and give the best possible product that we could give them. And they, in turn, embrace us back. And when you've got that mutual love, you don't want to leave. That's how it happened
exactly,
for me.
Oh, it's exactly, you're completely right. Completely right. You know, I mean, and that's why, you know, when I came, I remember coming here and, you know, Jim Tarbell just came, stopped by the restaurant and wanted to meet me. And of course, you know, someone like Jim Tarbell is a local person, but we're very, so proud of his city for decade and decade. And he brought me to Philly Market the week after I was here, you know. Some people talked me for like to the Bengal game 2 weeks after I was here. I've never been to a football game before that. Never had a chance to go in New York. And so when you become part of the culture of what people look for. And, you know, look at Cincinnati. I mean, if you really think after what you said, I was thinking of one thing because, you know, look at Procter & Gamble. One of the reasons Procter & Gamble probably became very, you know, very solid in Cincinnati is because, you know, like how many people I met from Cincinnati, from Europe, or from different type of different other country or different part of America because of a large corporation like Procter & Gamble.
For sure.
And so some of the neighborhood, they upset these people. And then after, it's really interesting to see some people who are moving, they're moving on, you know, they move on, but they always have a little part of Cincinnati and they remember a good of a life they had when they were in Cincinnati. And I see that very often of people who went back to Europe and then they always talk about Cincinnati like being a very livable town and it's a very charming town.
It's a very charming town and I feel as though the fact that you were open to it, you know, you were open to going to Finley Market with Jim Tarbell and you were open to going to the Bengals game and really immersing yourself in the culture. I think they sense that, the people sense that. That made all the difference in the world.
I mean, remind me a lot of where I grew up, you know, remind me a lot of, you know, Lille is very similar. You know, we don't have ski resort near us. We don't have the beach near us, you know, but the people are like, you know, real people.
You think Cincinnati is very much like Lille, France, where you grew up?
Yeah, very similar. Yeah. Very, very similar.
Let's talk about your foundation, Eat, Play, Give. Mm-hmm. This started when you and your wife lost your child to SIDS mm-hmm. in 2002. This has become what is now the largest SIDS foundation in America. Is that right?
You know, it's, you know, the foundation got created. I mean, and I always feel unfair to take the credit because the foundation was really created by more because of all the support we receive from the community and from our friend. More than it was something than it was, you know, it was than something I decided to do. And it was kind of like a different factor what happened where people really realized what we went through was like, you know, can happen to everyone. And we had the support of our friend to be able to be strong and to accept what just happened. And I think that was, you know, it's not like I don't remember one day or us saying, oh, we want to do something. I mean, of course, what I want to do was more like make people aware than can happen to anyone, you know, and I think it's not something you think it can ever happen. And so, but when it happened to you, then you become a different person, you know, you're a different person because you feel affected by just happened to you. And I think the most important things in this situation is feeling the love from your friend and so having people around you and giving you full support to, you know, and so the foundation was created definitely because of the support of friends and the support of the community and the support from the chef and the restaurant people. I mean, you know, so as a restaurant town, though, I think every chef are always there to support that. And so, and I see so many younger chefs now having kids. And so it's a feel good things, you know, and if, you know, after no
is the restaurant community like that? I mean, is it really tight-knit?
It's a very strong.
You're all
it's
very
a very
competitive.
Yes, but I mean, it's one of these, you know, but I think it is, and I think it's, you know, I think it is competitive, but I think at the same time it's not, you know, because, you know, it's a small town, and I think, you know, and we care for another, you know, I mean, we care for another. I mean, you know, everybody care for another, and of course, you know, like, you know, because everybody wants to make sure everybody, you know, why not everybody cannot be successful? Everybody should be able to be successful.
Do you listen to Second Date Update in the morning?
Yes, sometimes I do, yes.
I mean, he says that with this look on his face like he's a little guilty. It's like a guilty pleasure for him. How did you discover Second Date Update?
I guess driving my daughter to school.
How old is your daughter now?
She's going to be 14 in a few weeks, yes. So when I drive her, that's what I listen to in the morning, yes.
I have to tell people that there was one day, I think it was the table, and I was there with my niece, and you were talking about how much you enjoyed Second Date Update, which is why I brought this up. And he also said, but, you know, sometimes I have to change the channel because it gets a little too risque for my daughter who's in the car. Yeah. But Jean Robert, I'm telling you, I could sit here all day and I could talk to you about this, that, and the other thing. I've really enjoyed this, and it's a pleasure having you here. You really are a local legend. You're one of the most fascinating people that I've ever met. I consider myself, I'm a groupie, very much in the way.
Thank you. Well, I know.
I remember when you had... at Pigalle's, a table in the kitchen, you know, where you could kind of see everything that was going on.
It was right there, yeah.
You want to talk about dinner and a show.
Yes, I mean, I think it was, you know, when we had the right space, and actually we are working at L on the space, and we probably will put a chef table very soon at L kitchen, you know, in
that
L
would be incredible.
Kitchen, and then it's a... But I think what, you know, was fascinating, I have to be honest, because, you know, I never had that before, and it's something, I had the room at Pigalle's to be able to do it. And so we did it. And it was very interesting because, you know, some people were coming and they were watching us. And then after that, they were into their conversation. And I think that was a perfect setting, you know.
Yeah.
But it was also very nice for the people in the back, you know, because, you know, when we are in the back, and that's one of probably the reasons like Open Kitchen became very popular. But it was so nice for the young cooks to realize how much their work meant to people who were eating. Because sometimes, you know, we do a dish and we do, you know, it's a seasoned dish, and so the dish will be the same during the whole season, you know, the whole season.
Right.
And sometimes we, you know, we lose, you know, we don't have the connection, you know, then you create something and then people are actually eating it and eating it in a way where they're really excited about the flavor, yeah. Excited about certain thing. And I think for the young, you know, for the team to see that was really, really exceptional.
I have to say there really is something about seeing it created that, I mean, I'm excited that it's coming to the table anyway, because I know what I ordered, but to be able to see it being created is just fascinating. Mm-hmm. And I think what you have is a gift. We're glad that you brought your talents to Cincinnati.
Thank you.
Jean Robert, thanks
for
coming on Person of Interest.
Thank you so much for having me over.
Person of Interest is produced by Natalie Jones. If you found Jean Robert as interesting as I did, and I hope you did, send us an email to POI, which stands for Person of Interest, POI at WKRQ.com, and feel free to make a suggestion for a future Person of Interest. Natalie and I are going to continue to produce more of these episodes in the coming months, so please be sure to check back with us on occasion, and don't forget to rate and review us on iTunes. Until next time, for Person of Interest, I'm Jeff Thomas. Thanks for listening.
These are the people behind the stories that matter to you. Thanks for listening to Q102's Person of Interest with Jeff Thomas.